fearful look around the bedroom, assuring himself that Michael Houston, or a scarecrow version of him, was not in attendance. It was just his bedroom, every corner of it known. The nightmare began to drain away, but there was still enough of it left so that he scooted over next to Heidi. He did not touch her. She woke easily. But he got into the zone of her warmth and stole part of her quilt. Just a dream. Thinner, a voice in his mind answered implacably. Sleep came again. Eventually. The morning following the nightmare, the bathroom scales showed him at 215, and Halleck felt hopeful. Only 2 pounds. Houston had been right, coke or not. The process was slowing down. He went downstairs whistling and ate 3 fried eggs and 6 link sausages. On his ride to the train station, the nightmare recurred to him in vague fashion, more as a feeling of déjà vu than actual memory. He looked out the window as he passed Heads Up, which was flanked by Frank's Fine Meats and Toys R Joys, and for just a moment he expected to see a half score of lurching, shambling skeletons, as if comfortable, plushy Fairview had somehow been changed into Biafra. But the people on the streets looked okay. Better than okay. Yard Stevens, as physically substantial as ever, waved. Halleck waved back and thought, "Your metabolism is warning you to quit smoking, Yard." The thought made him smile a little, and by the time his train pulled into Grand Central, the last vestiges of the dream were forgotten. His mind at rest on the matter of his weight loss, Halleck neither weighed himself nor thought much about the matter for another 4 days. And then an embarrassing thing very nearly happened to him, in court and in front of Judge Hilmer Boynton, who had no more sense of humor than your average land turtle. It was stupid, the kind of thing you had bad dreams about when you were a grade school kid. Halleck stood to make an objection, and his pants started to fall down. He got halfway up, felt them sliding relentlessly down his hips and buttocks, bagging at the knees, and he sat down very quickly. In one of those moments of almost total objectivity, the ones which come unbidden and which you would often just as soon have forgotten, Halleck realized that his movement must have looked like some sort of bizarre hop. William Halleck, attorney at law, does his Peter Rabbit riff. He felt a blush mount into his cheeks.
"Is it an objection, Mr. Halleck, or a gas attack?"
The spectators, mercifully few of them, tittered.
"Nothing, Your Honor," Halleck muttered. I changed my mind."
Boynton grunted. The proceedings droned on, and Halleck sat sweating, wondering just how he was going to get up. The judge called a recess 10 minutes later. Halleck sat at the defense table pretending to pore over a sheaf of papers. When the hearing room was mostly empty, he rose, hands stuffed into his suit coat pockets in a gesture he had hoped looked casual. He was actually holding his trousers up through his pockets. He took off the suit coat in the privacy of a men's room stall, hung it up, looked at his pants, and then took off his belt. His pants, still buttoned and zipped, slithered down to his ankles. His change made a muffled jingle as his pockets struck the tile. He sat down on the toilet, held the belt up like a scroll, and looked at it. He could read a story there which was more than unsettling. The belt had been a Father's Day present 2 years ago from Linda. He held the belt up, reading it, and felt his heart speeding up to a frightened run. The deepest indention in the neat belt was just beyond the first hole. His daughter had bought it a little small, and Halleck remembered thinking at the time, ruefully, that it was perhaps forgivable optimism on her part. It had, nevertheless, been quite comfortable for a long while. It was only since he'd quit smoking that it got to be a bit hard to buckle the belt, even using the first hole. After he'd quit smoking, but before he'd hit the gypsy woman. Now there were other indents in the belt, beyond the second hole, and the fourth. And the fifth, finally, the sixth and last. Halleck saw with growing horror that each of the indents was lighter than the last. His belt told a truer, briefer story than Michael Houston had done. The weight loss was still going on, and it wasn't slowing down, it was speeding up. He had gotten to the last hole in the neat belt he'd believed only 2 months ago he would have to quietly retire as too small.
Now he needed a seventh hole, which he didn't have. He looked at his watch and saw that he'd have to get back soon. But some things were more important than whether or not Judge Boynton decided to enter a will into probate. Halleck listened. The men's room was quiet. He held up his pants with one hand and stepped out of the stall. He let his pants drop again and looked at himself in one of the mirrors over the row of sinks. He raised the tails of his shirt in order to get a better look at the belly, which until just lately had been his bane. A small sound escaped his throat. That was all, but that was enough. The selective perception couldn't hold up. It shattered all at once. He saw that the modest potbelly, which had replaced his bay window, was now gone. Although his pants were down and his shirt was pulled up over his unbuttoned vest, the facts were clear enough in spite of the ludicrous pose. Actual facts, as always, were negotiable. You learned that quickly in the lawyer business. But the metaphor which came was more than persuasive. It was undeniable. He looked like a kid dressed up in his father's clothes. Halleck stood in disarray before the short row of sinks, thinking hysterically, "Who's got the shinola? I've got to daub on a fake mustache." A gagging, rancid laughter rose in his throat at the sight of his pants bundled around his shoes and his black nylon socks climbing three-quarters of the way up his hairy calves. In that moment, he suddenly, simply believed everything. The gypsy had cursed him, yes, but it wasn't cancer. Cancer would have been too kind and too quick. It was something else, and the unfolding had only begun. A conductor's voice shouted in his mind, "Next stop, anorexia nervosa! All out for anorexia nervosa!" The sounds rose in his throat. Laughter that sounded like screams, or perhaps screams that sounded like laughter, and what did it really matter? "Who can I tell? Can I tell Heidi? She'll think I'm crazy." But Halleck had never felt saner in his life. The outer door of the men's room banged open. Halleck retreated quickly into the stall and latched it, frightened. "Billy?" John Parker, his assistant. "In here." "Boynton's coming back soon. You okay?" "Fine," he said. His eyes were shut. "Do you have gas? Is it your stomach?" "Yeah, it's my stomach, all right."
"I just got to mail a package. I'll be out in a minute or so."
"Okay." Parker left. Halleck's mind fixed on his belt. He couldn't go back into Judge Boynton's court, holding